Wrote this yesterday. I do not know and cannot see the purpose in believing how all human beings fell away and need to be restored back now. Is justice served by making me endure such horrid penalty for something that I never did? They started when I was a kid to tell me I was lost in sin and all my works despised and hated, guilty, dark, and separated. Telling me my destiny was set to cook in endless fire if I did not fail to thus comply, fulfilling deity's desire. They told me I must first admit that I deserved to die and burn. And if I did fail to submit, I would be forced to take my turn at standing there before the throne where I would be inspected, weighed, and found unqualified, then face the worst, rejected. Banished to a torture chamber, cast out, shunned, and spurned, thrown away by my Creator. This is what I learned. But in due time, I did awake, as if I had a brand new birth. I saw the truth of who I am, and I realized my valued worth. Step by step, I realigned the pattern set inside my mind, and now I pour my energy and faith and hope and love in me. My journey is continuing. I'm growing up. I'm doing well. I started when I realized I never even fail. So, you know, Matt. Well, I'll post that on Facebook for those of you who are my Facebook friends. But that's, you know, if it's a struggle to spend your whole life trying to get back to somewhere that you fell from. And it's a wonderful relief to find out you never fail. It takes away all the effort. It takes away all the works. It takes away all the things that we could never do. I'm with Gary. I was never a rule keeper. I couldn't keep up. And I tried. I tried hard. And I was Paul the Apostle in Romans, is it 7, where the thing that I don't want to do, I do, and that which I should not do, I do, and I did it. And all the rest of the stuff he says there, the stuff I knew I couldn't do, I did. I found myself doing it. And he blamed it on sin. He said, it's not me, it's sin that dwells in my flesh. I was glad to find that excuse, but I still felt the guilt of it. I'm going to sit this right here. I felt the guilt of it all as I lived out, especially my teen years, when we have certain desires and certain things going on in our hormones and in our lives. And, you know, we're told by the preacher every Sunday night that God's watching and knows our secret sins. And that troubled me, that God would know my secret sins and probably knew where my stashes were too. If he was that nosy that he had been watching all that was going on, he probably knew what I had hid and where it was hid. And I was so afraid he'd tell my mama, because her and God were like this, seemed like, you know. So I stayed nervous as a teenager, and I tried really hard not to partake of the things that I was told were wicked and evil, and that would. I was tying my own noose around my own neck, our Pentecostal preacher said. I was a Pentecostal, and when I was a teenager, I switched from Methodist to Baptist, because my sister said the Methodist wouldn't get me saved. And then I switched from Baptist to Pentecostal because I liked some of the youth group up there. I started going to the Pentecostal church. But that preacher, he had a real anointing on him, and he had a finger about a yard long, and he'd lean over his pulpit and say, God's the all-seeing eye! And he'd, oh my God, oh my God. That was bad. I'm sorry. Stretch your hands up here and pray for this recorder. Okay.
You mean all these cameras and none of them were on?
So I was in the Pentecostal church, and we had a very anointed preacher there. And one of his favorite things to do on Sunday morning, Sunday night, whenever he was preaching, he had a finger about a yard long. And I'd be sitting there. I was already scared because I knew God didn't know my business. And old preacher would lean over the pulpit and he would say, God's the all-seeing eye! And that big old long finger would point out, and I knew he was pointing at me. There wasn't but about 200 of us dumb enough to go there. But every time he pointed, it was at me. And I don't know why. If he knew, I thought, he knows. And I guess everybody was sitting there thinking, he knows, because everybody had secret sins. It was such a mystery to me. I didn't realize this until sometime later when I went to a men's conference, and it was one of those where everybody, I was like, you know, they started the thing off by saying, we're going to walk in the light with each other. We're going to take down the guards. This is the conference where nobody's going to lie to each other. We're going to let it all hang out. And they started with all that stuff. I thought, well, okay, let's do it. So, and this is about 600 men at a conference. It was up in North Carolina or South Carolina. The church was from there, but we were in Gatlinburg, at a big place there in Gatlinburg is where the conference was. So they started one night, and as the service went on for hours, and the preacher was preaching on everybody's secret sin, and it got over to self-pleasure. I'll try to keep it clean, but the topic got over to self-pleasure, and the preacher said, "Now, I'm going to tell you all that God knows who's lying and who's telling the truth." And the guy was just a pervert, didn't even want to know all our business, I guess. But he said, "Don't lie to God and don't lie to me, but if you're involved in secret sin, the secret sin of self-pleasuring, then I want you to stand up and come to this altar."
Oh, no.
topics about living the abundant life, the full life. I want to live the best possible life I can live. Yes. Jesus said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. I want whatever that is, whatever that means. I hope it means great riches. I hope it means, you know, long life and great beauty and lots of jewelry. But whatever it means, then I want it. I want that abundant life. And where I have been in my life, I've been hearing a real strong, clear word about listening. We have to learn to listen. And I don't think we're on a very good page where listening is concerned, the most of us. I won't judge you. I guess I just did. But for me, I'm learning a new way to listen. And maybe some of this will mean something to you, and maybe it won't. 16 times in the New Testament, Jesus said, he that hath an ear to hear, let him hear. An ear. He's not talking about the cartilages on the side of your head, or he'd have said ears. But there's a listening ear on the inside of you, and it's in your heart, but this is not your heart, this is your heart. Now, we want to be spiritual and say, oh, that's your head, this is your heart. You don't hear nothing when you're blood pumper. No hearing takes place inside your blood pumper. We all want to talk about, well, Jesus is in my heart. Jesus is in your understanding. Anything that you really believe happens in your understanding, which is technically up here. So this is the heart of you. The word heart in the Bible is core, like the core of an apple, the heart of an apple. The center of an apple is here. The center of you is here, not here. And I still point here when I'm saying you got to get this in your heart, because it's, you know, the center. We think that's the seat of the soul. But our soul is our mind, our emotions, and our intellect. It's the psuche in the Greek. And this is your soul. This is your heart. This is the center of you. If Gary and I go and have a heart transplant and switch hearts, we're still going to think the same. But if we go and have a brain transplant, as if his brain would fit in my head, if we had a brain transplant, then I would think like Gary. Forget the body. I would be Gary if his brain was over here, because the real Gary is Gary's brain. It's his thinker. The real him is up here. So heart, head are the same. Heart is in the head. This is your blood pumper and your boobies. It has nothing to do with your heart. Okay, we got that figured out. So when Jesus said, he that hath an ear to hear, he wasn't talking about these ears, but there's an ear on the inside of you. And he said, let him hear. If you've got an ear to hear, use it. Let him hear. You have an ear to hear the voice of the Spirit inside of you. Use it. I did another little safe act, S-A-F-E-A-C-T, set aside all foregone expectations and conclusions. Safe act. Set aside all foregone expectations and conclusions. That's safe act today. Set aside all foregone expectations and conclusions today. That's safe act. We have to set aside foregone conclusions. You want to hear the voice? You want to hear what the voice is saying today? Call it the voice of your heart, the voice of the Spirit, the voice of God, the inner voice, the voice of my soul. Call it, but the voice. There's a voice that you can hear that speaks beyond what your brain speaks. It's beyond knowledge. It's beyond knowing. And that voice is talking all the time. We don't usually hear the voice for a few reasons. One of the reasons we don't hear the voice is because we're too busy talking. One of the reasons we don't hear the voice is we've got a preset thing in us that we're not going to hear the voice if it disagrees with something we already know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the hardest part of learning is unlearning first. Yeah. I do construction for a living. I always have to supplement the ministry that I've been in for 30-something years. And we got a job to go and fix a house that had an underground spring under one end of it that had created a sinkhole, and part one of the bedrooms had fell down in the hole. Well, guess what we had to do? We had to tear down, starting at the roof, we had to tear off the roof and tear down the walls and tear out the floors and remove the foundation that had been built and get down to the very footings and bust them up and throw them out of the hole and put a pipe where that spring was and start back in there with gravel and then some field dirt and then pack it down and pour new footings and lay the foundation and build the walls up to the roof to get the thing done. We had to go all the way down to the very footings of that thing. And that's hard work. I didn't want to do it. It wasn't worth it. It was one of those jobs that you just think, I do not want to dig that up. That's the way folks are. You've been believing stuff for so long, you just have a hard time digging up the footers. But if you don't get rid of that foundation, you can build the prettiest new belief system you want to, but if it's still on that rotten foundation with that spring under it and that sinkhole, it will not stand the test of time. I was talking to my friend Jim before the service about that. He grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's some deep doo-doo. The Seventh-day Adventist doctrine, some of you that grew up Jehovah's Witnesses, my Pentecostal heritage is rough. I mean, it's pretty rough. But you get into some of those things, Catholicism, and a lot of those, there's more garbage and junk and stuff and doctrine and ideas and rules. And if they start on you when you're 2 years old, giving you coloring sheets about it, and you know, and get that foundation in you so deep, it's hard to hear truth. When you get grown and truth hits you, the first thing you say is, that ain't true, because you don't believe it. You already know what you believe. I want to tell you something. If you came into these meetings already knowing what you believe, you probably didn't hear anything we said. Quit thinking you know what you believe. You might know what you believed yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is a new day. The sun, it didn't actually rise. The earth turned and tilted the right direction, and we evolved around the sun. And the Bible lied. It said the sun rises and sets, but it don't. I'm just one of those, we science figured out that was a lie. But the sun appeared to come up this morning, and with it, folks will say came new mercy, but I want to tell you, with it came new understanding of who we are, where we are. We're at a different place than we were yesterday. We have advanced not just in history and in the non-existent time. Yesterday doesn't exist anymore. This is now. This is now. Now's where the power is. Now's where the revelation is. The revelation's not yesterday. I used to get so tired of one of my favorite preachers in the old school world. I used to live in Brother Hagin telling stories from 1952. I was in a little white church down on White Street in Tuscaloosa, Alabama in 1952, and telling some story that happened. Well, good. What's happening now? Yeah. This is now. That yesterday was then. This is now. Today. And if you don't empty out what you knew yesterday, you may not have room for what we're going to say today. Now, as you empty it out, good. Absorb what needs to be absorbed. Hold on to what needs to be held on to. But there's some things that you need to pour out in order to make room for some other things that we need to pour in. Be open. Quit being adamant about things. Keep emptying out. Jesus said, my sheep... I was thinking about this verse the other day. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice and they will not follow the voice of a stranger. And I was thinking that that's very comforting. They used to tell me all the time, you're going to get caught up in some cult group. No, we don't hear the voice of strangers if we're Jesus' sheep. But forget all that Jesus the shepherd and we're the sheep stuff. Forget all that and bring this thing down to you're the shepherd and the sheep are your emotions, your mind, your beliefs. Within the framework of your life, you are the great shepherd of your own emotions, of your own belief system. You are the great shepherd of the things on the inside of you, your body. You're the shepherd of your body. You're the shepherd of your emotions, your intentions, your decisions. They won't hear another shepherd. You can't tell me what to do. As much as I respect Mike and Gary, they can't tell me what to believe. I am the shepherd of my belief system. And you're the shepherd of your belief system. I can't tell you what to believe today. I can tell you what I believe. I can tell you to be open. You might catch a glimpse of what I'm seeing and see your own version of it. I can tell you about a song I heard, but that doesn't mean you heard it. I can give you the words and say, here, sing it in this key. But when you sing it, that's your song. That's your view. That's your belief. That's who you are. That's your heart. You don't need Mike's heart. You need your heart. You don't need Mike's views. You don't need my ideas. You don't need Gary's beliefs. You need to develop yours. But if we can encourage you by saying, here's what we're seeing, then that's how we hear the voice, that voice that speaks. I love to be in conversation with somebody on Facebook or talking to LaVon or just having a conversation, and they'll say something that's coming out of their mouth and their vocal cords, but it's really the voice that's saying it. Yeah. Yes. Because the voice speaks through any source. Yes. I've heard the voice through John Wayne. I've heard the voice through Andy Griffith. Yeah. I've heard the voice through a prostitute one time. I've heard the voice through preachers, more amazingly. I've heard the voice through Travis Tritt, way more than preachers. I've heard the voice through news commentators. Right in the middle of a fake news broadcast, I heard the voice say something to me. I've heard the voice in this room today through many of you, and you didn't even know you were being a channel for the voice. But you said something that was already in my spirit, And when you said it, it opened up a door that caused it to be, look at me pointing my spirit, that was already inside of me. And when you said it, it opened up the door and it became a reality to me because I had that double confirmation, the one already in me, and then you said it, and that's the agreement that I needed to cause it to be real in my life. Mm-hmm. Your words are so powerful. And when you think to say something, it's probably because somebody's sitting there, needs to hear it. They've already heard it in their heart, but you saying it is the voice confirming it. And then there you have that agreement. And in the midst of that agreement, when those two voices are together, something beautiful is born. Anytime two get together, something beautiful can be born. So the voice in you and the voice in me can create something very beautiful. Does that make any sense at all?
Yes.
Remember who John the Baptist was? The voice of one. The voice of one crying in the wilderness. Not the voice of many, not the voice of John. The voice of one. You know what John the Baptist and Winnie the Pooh have in common? Same middle name. John the Baptist, Winnie the Pooh. I was just seeing if y'all was listening. The voice always comes from within, even if we hear it from another source. It's the same voice. You don't have a different voice than I do. It's the same voice. This is a tangerine with 6.5 billion parts we're talking about here. That's humanity. We're not 6.5, 7 billion people. We're a giant tangerine with 7 billion slices. And we're all connected to each other and we have the same flavor. And we can get torn apart and put in different areas and one can be served in Jell-O and one can be served in a fruit salad, which makes me think of y'all's family reunion. And Some of them, that'd be my family reunion, some of them can be served to a child in a child's lunchbox for a snack, but it's all the same tangerine and all those are just slices from the same fruit. There's no way to separate us one from the other. And you've never heard a different voice than the one I've heard. Well, my voice said something different than your voice. You heard something different than what I heard at a different time, maybe, but trust me, it's the same source and it's the same voice that's speaking to all of us. That's hard for me to accept sometimes. I don't want everybody else to be right. I just want us to be right. I want them to be wrong and us to be right. It's really hard, but you know, do you know what? You can be right without everybody else being wrong.
Yes.
And I don't like that. I want them to all be wrong and us to be right. But they can be right too. And this is something that the voice has been speaking to me about, is to let up on people that aren't seeing what I'm seeing or hearing what I'm hearing. Because the same voice has the same ability to reveal the same thing in perfect timing to somebody else that's not hearing what I'm hearing. And it's not my job to convict them, convince them, or convert them. And that's hard for an evangelical to quit converting people. I was raised to convert people. I used to hand out thousands of tracts. Oh, I was a tract man. I'm ashamed to say I handed out chick tracts at one time before I woke up. And I still hand them out now at campgrounds that are short of toilet paper, but or need fire starters maybe or something like that. But I used to hand out tracts. Why? Because it was my job to convert people to my way of thinking. How arrogant is that? I'm right. Y'all are wrong. Listen to me. I'm going to convince you. And then we're going to pray a prayer and seal the deal. I wrote a prayer. I think prayers can be so beautiful. I was thinking about the sinner's prayer, and I wrote one this morning that you're going to appreciate. Every head bowed and every eye closed, no one looking around. That's what we had to say. We didn't want nobody looking at each other's business. We all kept one eye open. Just see what we could see. Every head bowed and every eye closed, no one looking around. If you'd like to pray no prayer to no one and say nothing, repenting of nothing and accepting nothing into anywhere, if you'd like the assurance of nothing and know that if you died today in any way of anything that you'd go nowhere immediately and spend never in nothingness, then join me in no words of no value and raise your hand. I see that hand. I see that hand. I see that hand. There in the back, I see that hand. Be bold now. If you're ashamed of Jesus, he'll be ashamed of you. See, I used to give good altar calls. This prayer means something. I'm going to read it again. You know, we used to say, if you'd like to accept Jesus and make heaven your home, and this one's so much better. If you'd like to pray no prayer to no one and say nothing, repenting of nothing and accepting nothing into anywhere, if you'd like assurance of nothing and know that if you died today in any way of anything, that you'd go nowhere immediately and spend never in nothingness, then join me in no words of no value and raise your hand. Just raise that hand, please. I'm going to pray. Let us all pray nothing to no one and go nowhere. Because we're already somewhere beautiful. But I bet I could walk into a lot of churches and just say those words and that people would cry and lift their hand. Because folks don't really listen to the voice. They listen to what they already know. They already know that. So, oh, the preacher's doing an altar call prayer. So I already know what he's going to say. So, you know, folks be slipping their hand up or wishing Brother Johnny would. You know, nudging Brother Johnny, this one's for you. Maybe he'll quit drinking Budweiser if he gets down to the altar. The voice is talking. We just have to hear the voice. The voice is universal in everyone and everything. I've heard the voice everywhere. I heard the voice in a storm last week in Georgia. The voice was down there saying some things to me. I've heard the voice in sunrises and sunsets and in the rain. And the hardest place for me personally to hear the voice, and the place that we ought to be able to hear it best, I'm making a confession of sin to you here, it's hard for me to do this, but it's the place where you ought to be best at hearing the voice is in dead silence. It's hard for me to be silent. It's hard for me to enjoy silence. I don't know if that's a mental thing with me. Even when I was studying for school, I had to do it with Gilligan's Island on the TV. Or, you know, Andy and Barney and Opie, and I could watch that and study at the same time. I need background noise. I need radios playing and TVs blaring and children screaming and dogs barking, and I need that. I got to have all that. So for me to be silent is one of the hardest things in the world. It's like telling Wesley Joe to be still. She can do it for 3 seconds, and she starts moving again. I said, be still. Hold real still. It's important. Don't move. Hold still. She'll go. I said, you just moved your shoulder and your arm and your cheek. Hold still. 3 seconds. Her record's 3 seconds so far. Be still in silence and listen. My record's probably 3 seconds. Does not say 12:15. I got a 12:30, right? Yep. Okay. We're on a journey. On the way up here, we use Google Maps. And we kind of know where to go, but Google Maps tells us where to go. You know how it is. You put in your destination, it says, you know, get on the highway, you know, go 17 miles, get off exit 302. So we listen for the next voice. And if the voice isn't speaking, we just keep doing what we were told to do last. And if the voice isn't saying anything new, then we don't look for a new direction. Y'all don't. Y'all say, I know we should have had a turn before now. We cannot, you know, this thing's broke. Wait a minute. Let me reset this thing because something's wrong. It's not broken. There's just no new direction. Just stay on the highway. We got, at one point in our journey, it said, turn north on I-75, go 176 miles. I thought, wow, 176, I hated that, 176 miles before we get a new direction. I don't like those stretches where there's no new direction. I get off an exit just so it'll say, turn left. Make a U-turn. No, you're going the wrong way. Turn around. But a lot of us in life, that voice that comes to tell us what to do, we get nervous if it isn't talking. That's good when the voice isn't talking. It means you're going the right direction. Just, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And after a while, the voice will give you the next direction. You don't have to hear from the voice constantly because you are the voice. And you already know what to do, and it's your voice. It's not the Australian guy on her phone, and it's not the biatch on my phone that has an attitude with me. I know she has an attitude. When I don't follow her direction, she gets an attitude. I don't know if your girl does on your Siri, but Miss Siri has a little attitude, I think. But I'm switching to the Australian guy on Diane's phone. He's very, very chipper, and I like him a lot. He says, there's a lot to go and walk about with me. I'm like, yeah, much, much better than turn around. Turn around. Make a U-turn. You did it wrong, dum-dum. But it's in that silence where we find the confirmation of who we are and that we're in the right place and it's the right time and nothing's wrong. And we can hear in the silence that beautiful affirmation that shouts who we are and where we are and that we don't need to make a turn. Another great place to hear the voice is while you're creating. I was reading the story of creation recently, even in the Bible. I don't know how Moses knew so much. It's not like he was sitting there in a lawn chair watching it take place. But afterwards, he made all that up and said that's how it happened. So his account of creation, he also gave a pretty good account of his death and burial, which I can't understand. How in the true infallible book, how Moses wrote of his own death. It seems odd to me. But as the way he explained creation, it was in the middle of all that creating that the voice began to speak. And at the end of each day, the voice said, "It is good. It is good. It is good." Sometimes it's when we're creating that we hear that affirmation, "It is good." When Sarah's creating a dessert, or when one of you's creating a beautiful painting, or one of you's fixing that car and you've taken that alternator out and the other one won't line up, but you're an artist and you figure out how to crawl under there and hold it up with your elbow and push it with a screwdriver and somehow it falls right into place and you've just created a beautiful thing that the bolts will go straight into and you hear that voice, "It is good. It is good." It's while Liz is in the kitchen making a meal for 18 people in 20 minutes. I think she's a witch. I'm not sure. We invited guests over and Sarah was there and Dennis and we had kids over and I walked in the kitchen and there was raw broccoli in a pan and I didn't see anything else. And Liz is over there just fellowshipping. So I go over and I say, "Are we eating in 15 minutes? Because it's like we're supposed to eat at 6 o'clock. We got people on insulin in this house and they took their medicine and we got to eat at 6. And she said, "Oh, okay, yes, we'll get to it." And I'm thinking 7 o'clock, at least 7 o'clock till she gets this done. And true enough, in 15 minutes, she had a table spread from one end to the other. It looked like a Thanksgiving dinner, and every dish was impeccably beautiful and wonderful and tasty. I don't know. I think she could be a witch. I didn't see her wiggle her nose. But she's an amazing creator in the kitchen, and y'all have tasted some of her stuff. She's doing lunch today, and give her a hug. She's the best mom ever, and when it comes to miracle meals, nobody does it better than Mama Liz.
She's the Instapot,
the miracle Instapot woman. But that's part of her artistry. That's part of the gift that she has. She's an artist in the kitchen. She can do many other things, but she's an artist in the kitchen. And in the middle of her creating, if she'll listen, she'll hear that voice, the one that wasn't at my Little League games when I was little because he was busy working, the voice that should have been there to tell me I was doing good. My dad didn't fulfill that role for me. And the one that should have been telling me I did good in my grooming and my room cleaning, my mom, she didn't bother. But there was a voice, if I'd been taught to listen to it, who at any time in my life when I was creating and doing my best, that voice would say what that voice says to Liz when she's cooking. "It is good. It is very good." So create. Do what you do. Some of you create music and some of you create the most beautiful plants. You can plant a bulb. I plant a bulb and I have to beg it to bloom sometimes. Please give me a tulip. Would you please? And some of you can plant a bulb and you know just how to water it and fertilize it and talk to it and play it Beethoven or whatever it is you do. And it blooms like 4 tulips on one stem. And I'm like, that's because you're an artist and you know how to create in that area. And when you're in the middle of creating, you'll hear that voice. "It is good. It is good." We need that. We need somebody to tell us it is good. It is good. And if your mom and daddy aren't here to do it, and if your husband don't do it like he ought to, and if your wife just doesn't seem to notice how hard you work and doesn't tell you that it is good, then you have to know this, that on the inside of you, there is an eternal voice that never stops saying that. Amen. Never stops saying, "It is good. It is good." That's the first recorded voice we have in the Bible. It is good. It is good. And that's what's speaking inside of you. So we have listening. We've got to learn to listen, and we have to learn how to listen in silence. And the voice is going to come from the inside of you. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because I'm still in the middle of learning some things about it. But the second part of what I'm learning right now is intention. An intention is an idea, an aim, a determination, or a plan implying a desire to do or to be. But intention has to be about now. It can't be about, and Rex said this without knowing I was fixing to teach on this, before service today, he said something about how can we have a plan if there's no future? And this is the very thing I was contemplating as I talked about intention or wrote about intention, took some notes on it, is this isn't the kind of intention that I intend to do something in 10 years, so I'm going to begin now laying aside. This is not blueprint planning for the future I'm talking about, but it's the intent of my heart to do certain things in this moment that I'm alive. Today, and I write, Moses had his 10 commandments. They're kind of outdated in my mind, but I have 10 intentions. And my 10 intentions, I write every few weeks, I revise them. And I'll scratch one out and write in a new one that's more to the surface in my own personal life. And I've never shared these on Facebook because they're ever changing. And rather than explain it, but there's certain things that in my life today I'm intending. And I'll just read you my current list of intentions. And they haven't changed in the last few days. The last time I changed them was last week. But here they are right now. I just wrote, I intend to, and then I list them. I intend to, one, love and accept me as perfect and divine as is now. One of my intentions is to love me no matter what. I'm flawless. I'm perfect. All things are as they should be. No. Nothing. Nothing's out of order. N-O-O-O. No. Nothing's out of order in my life. Don't need to fix anything. Don't need to quit anything. Don't need to change anything. I'm the Shazazz. And you've got to say that about you. So my first intention is to love and accept me. Forget the rest of y'all and God. Me. That's who I need to accept as my personal Savior. Me. Because I'm the one who's going to save me if anybody is. Two, comprehend oneness. I intend to comprehend oneness. There's only one. I don't get oneness yet. I don't get we're all slices of the same tangerine. I still see colors of people and sexes of people. And I still see nationalities of people in parts of my thinking. I want to comprehend oneness. I intend to use my words as a scalpel and not a sword. Your words are sharp and powerful. You can cut people up with them, or you can slice into the infection that's in them and release the pus and heal them with a sword. I want my words to be healing. That's one of my intentions. I intend to accept the cards I'm dealt. We played Mexican Train. Had so much fun with Rex and Liz around the table playing Mexican Train. And man, sometimes, I don't know how they did it, but they slipped me the worst dominoes ever. I don't know. I would get up to go get a drink, and I think that Robbie Joe and those two connived and gave me the worst possible hand and put it right in front of me so I'd choose it. Because when I flipped up those dominoes, and they were all making their trains down the table that they had this many they could play, if you know the game or not, and I'd have three that go together. I'd have a three train, and they'd have 10 in a row propped up here, and I'm thinking, how'd they sneak this in on me like this? Y'all all play cards sometime or another, and you wonder, how can I keep getting these bad hands? Quit worrying about the hand you have. Every hand is beautiful. Nothing's out of order. You were supposed to get the hand that you have. I know it looks like the neighbor's better off than you, and he has a better job and a cuter husband and better health, and you know his dog does tricks and yours is stupid, and you know you got all this stuff going on, and you think he's been dealt a better hand. No, your hands are equal in the sight of the universe. It's not about the hand you were dealt. It's about how you play the hand you were dealt. And if you play two aces and I play two twos, we both win. If two twos is all I had and that's what I play. Now, if I refuse to play my hand and grumble about it and say, I didn't get a good hand again, well, then, you know, then I lose. I intend to accept the cards I'm dealt. Five, I intend never to take anything personally. That's so hard. When somebody calls you an SOB, it's kind of hard. Of course, that technically is about my mother, not me. I intend to not take anything personally. Because when people say something ugly about you, that's always about them. That's never about you. That's always something going on in their ugly. They might have seen something that they think is ugly in you because it's in them through their own filter. They've attacked you. That's never about you. Never, ever, not even once, not even an ounce of it is anything to do with you. You're just the object of their terror, and it's all about them. Don't take it personally. It's all about them. Number six, I intend to never let anyone call me their leader, their pastor, their guru, their anything like that. That's my current intention. I don't want to be anybody's pastor. Don't want to be anybody's guru, leader, teacher, bishop, shepherd. Don't want to be, because I don't want that responsibility. My responsibility ends at the end of my fingernails. Right there. See that? That's where my responsibility ends. I'm responsible for what I say. I'm not responsible for what you hear or what you do or anything else about your life. And I don't want followers. And that may be an intention you never have to establish in your heart. But if you've been in the ministry, there's some folks that just want you to tell them what to do. There's folks that they want to sleep with you. I've never figured that one out. But just because you're in the ministry, suddenly people want you to control their lives. They want you to... I don't want to control anybody's life. I don't want to sleep with anybody except Wesley, Joe, and Chloe and a snuggle nap. I don't want... Well, a few others. You get it. Number seven. I intend to accept pain as part of my path and embrace pain as an instructor in my life.
There you go.
Now, that is not to say I'm not going to take my medicine and rub my oils and sit in my hot tub and do my other stuff, but I will accept the pain that is in my life as an instructor. And I do believe there's a great lesson to learn in the midst of pain and suffering, that we need to learn the lesson. Not that there's a deity making us suffer to learn the lesson. That's BS. But since suffering's here, what door can I open in the midst of it? Where, and that's another one of my topics here, really. I intend to be content as the light and to stop pursuing enlightenment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. Mm.
This is a hard one because I order books and I read the books and I jot the ideas down and I think, yeah, now that's good. That, I'm going to add that to what I believe. And they didn't do anything but say what I already knew anyway. They might have said it in a different way, and it cost me $29.95 to hear it. You know, but personally, and I'm not telling you to do this, but I'm going to stop pursuing enlightenment. Mm-hmm. There's nobody brighter than I am, and there's nobody brighter than you are. Yeah. We are the light. And I want to be content with being the light instead of adding to my enlightenment, if that makes any sense. And that may not make sense to you, but as a teacher, I want to shine the light I am and not just have to go pull lights from other people that I have to say. And I'm still going to keep quoting Mike and Gary and other great people. I'm not talking about that. You get it or you don't. I'll move on. I intend to accept every person's path as a bridge to nowhere and somewhere or everywhere. If somebody chooses the Methodist path to get there, I don't care. If somebody is a Wiccan and that's how they connect with their spiritual insides and that's how they hear the voice, then blessed be. Blessed be. Mm-hmm. If somebody happens to choose the path of the Jehovah's Witnesses, as damn dumb as that is, that's the path they chose. And it will get them to nowhere as quick as the Pentecostal path will. Nowhere is where they're going. And if you want to go on that bridge, it will get you there as quick as the atheist bridge. Make no difference to me what bridge you take. We're all got our own bridges to take. Pick your bridge. They all go nowhere and they all go everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they all end up somewhere. And it's you may get there slower than me or faster than me. And I don't know. I'm not looking at your bridge to see how far along you are. Right. I can't care about that. I'm not in competition with you. I'm not even in competition with the other me's that want to get there quicker or slower. I just am. And I'm on my bridge. And it's not wrong. My bridge isn't wrong because it's not like your bridge. Congratulations on your beautiful bridge. This is my bridge. Don't piss on it. You go back to your bridge. This is my bridge. And I know it's got some homeless people laid up on the side of it and some garbage and some cracked concrete in it, a few potholes. But this is a good bridge to fish off of. I mean, I've got folks fishing off this bridge right here. So leave my bridge alone. You walk out your bridge. And I intend to let go of joysticks of control. I don't have any desire to be God in my life or yours. And I'm going to quit doing joysticks in people's lives because I know better. I'm still trying to let go of my grown kids. I have 11 grown children, counting one adopted, 10 natural, that are 22 to 35 years old. And I still think I know more of what they need to be doing than they themselves know.
Oh, yes.
I think I'm smarter than my kids. How dumb is that? I think I know more about how to build a garage than my son who builds garages, so I'm going to call him up and tell him what he's doing wrong. Now, doesn't that make sense? Instead of just minding my business and letting him live his life, guess what? He'll learn what he's doing wrong in his own way, and then he'll get it better than if I tell him. If I tell him, he's just going to get mad at me and call me mean and controlling. Mm-hmm. So I just need to let go and let him make his mistakes and let him fall off the ladder. If he don't have sense enough to pull the little legs out and stick them in the ground, then let it slide out from under him a time or two, and he'll probably figure out how to set a ladder. Let go of the joystick of control and let people make their mistakes. Let them run off their bridges. Let them mess up. And I know you're the great one who is called to see people about to mess up and help them. Quit helping people. Quit helping people. Just let them do their thing. They're probably going to do it anyway, and they're just going to be pissed off at you for trying to stop them. I had a girl in my church. She was just a hoe. That's all she was, a hoe. She had slept with four men in my church. H-O, a hoe, not a garden tool, a hoe. She had slept with four men in my church, and I watched the pattern. She always slept with married men. She always tried to bust up the marriage. She always elbowed her way in through babysitting their children or finding some interest in their lives, and then she'd end up sleeping with a husband, and then they'd end up mad with the husband and wife. Well, I saw her buddying up to a guy on my worship team. She came and she could sing like Whitney Houston. So she was on the worship team. We had a lot of hoes on our worship team. It didn't matter if you was a hoe as long as you could sing good. And if you had money, we'd let you be an elder in the church. Oh.
Keep talking.
It's not going to mess up lunch.
No.
You sure? Just a few more minutes. I'm almost done. I'm almost done. Are y'all not bored, are you? Okay, just a minute longer. I apologize. Just a minute longer. I'm long-winded. What was I talking about?
Hoes.
So, thank you. So, now, y'all don't judge my brother because he had hoes on his mind. He sure was quick to say it, though, wasn't he? Like, he wasn't going to forget that one. She talked about, maybe the Lord's saying something over here. Y'all stretch your hand towards this man. So, I saw her at worship practice one night sitting on the piano bench with my piano player. I thought, well, how convenient, the hoe and the piano player. And I saw her like scooting in, and she said, will you teach me how to do chords? This is like, kind of like me and Sarah, but a little different. She said, because I really want her to teach me how to do chords. I'm not interested. She's got the wrong package over there. But she ain't toting what I want. But anyway, she's all up in his business. Will you teach me how to do chords? And I'm thinking, here we go. So after worship practice, she left in her hoe mobile, and I with fringe hanging from the front. So I have a little talk with him. I said, now I'm going to tell you something, you know, because I love you. And I want to explain something to you. You know, this sister that is doing this to you, she's a hoe. And she has done this with several men, and I'm watching her make the moves on you. And this thing's going to end up in calamity if you don't stop it right now. So he said, thank you so much, Pastor. Walked to the car, dialed her number, and said, you're not going to believe what Pastor just said about you. In fact, I want to tell you in person, meet me at the motel. So he went and met her, and they ended up having an affair. Because I was running the joystick and trying to control. I saw what was going on, and I thought I was responsible for stopping it. I'm not responsible for any of y'all or anybody else. My responsibility ends here. Now, that's a little different if you have minor children that you are responsible to raise. I get that. But beyond my minor children and my pets, I have no responsibility. And if you'll free yourself of all that, you'll be happy, happy, happy. So my intentions, these are intentions. They're not laws or commandments or rules. They're not steps to greater light. Having intentions opens the doors for teachers. It encourages opportunities. If I intend to sow, this is a funny thing that happens. I'll wake up, and if I intend today that I'm going to sow into the lives of poor people, I pay it forward. Every week, I find a way to pay something forward into somebody's life that's less fortunate than me. And I don't have a lot of money sometimes, but if I intend to do it, the money comes. I would say to Robbie Joe, it's time for us to sow into somebody's life. I want to do something special for somebody. Sometimes I'll have somebody in mind. Sometimes I don't. I'll go to the post office, and there's a letter from anonymous whoever, Facebook friend, sent me a $20 bill. They didn't know why they did it, felt led to do it. I got my sowing money. I intended it. The money manifested. Then I go around the corner, and there's somebody there that I bet there's a little black man in my neighborhood, not too far from me, that is homeless. He lives on people's front porches. I'm sure he smokes crack and drinks alcohol, and I don't care that he does. If it get a little peace from his life, have order. I wanted to bless him. So I was able to bless him because I woke up intending to do so. And the provision came because of it. If you'll have some intentions, then you'll see some doors open. You'll see some provision and some opportunities manifest that won't manifest if you have no intentions to begin with. So get some good intentions going. In the faith movement, we taught a lot about faith and how to use it to extract blessings from the Father. Faith is simply believing. That's all it is. Intentions are a little bit different than just believing for something. They're written in your heart, and it's about who you are. It's not just about what you're believing for. It's about who you are. When my girls are 25 and somebody comes to court them, one of my questions is going to be, what are... you know, yeah, at least 25. Oh, there goes the joystick. I'm controlling my kids again. Okay, when they're of age, what's of age? Georgia's probably 14. 14. So when a young man or a young woman, I'm open-minded about this thing. So when somebody, whoever they're attracted to, I don't care. I saw a pregnant girl the other day, a friend of mine's wife's pregnant, and I said, is it a boy or a girl? He said, it's a girl. I said, gay or straight? He said, I don't know. I said, well, it's 2017. If it's born a boy and wants to be a girl, we can change that too, can't we? He said, there's a lot more to think about than I thought. I said, just say long as it's healthy. I said, what if it's not healthy? He said, we're going to love it anyway. I said, all right, go for it. When the girls have quarters come, you know what the question is that dads ask of somebody? What are your intentions? What is it that you have in mind? So what is it that you have in mind in your life? What are your intentions? Intend some stuff, and you might be surprised. So then we have got F over here, and F is, I'm going to move real fast on these two. F is frustrations. Anybody have any frustrations lately? Frustrations. Anybody got that going on in your life? Boy, do I. I have found that there are two extremes where you can find opportunities to grow and to learn and to hear that voice. On one side, we have suffering, pain, frustration, and great sadness. On the other end of the spectrum, we have wonder and elation and happiness and great joy. And both of those can open that door. In the middle of your greatest joy and elation, there's an opportunity to learn something. Right in the middle of your greatest frustration and pain, there's an opportunity to learn something. Don't hate your frustration times. Don't hate. And there's ways to get through your frustration. I get through mine with humor. You know, so I need medicine sometimes. By the time I finish looking for my car keys, I need some nerve pills, as my mama called them. But the real medicine that I have found in my life is laughter. Laughter does good like a medicine. That's scripture. And if you can turn it into funniness, turn something into humor, I laugh at myself over how many times a day I hide my keys in my wallet from myself. It's gotten to be funny. And if I can get myself to the laughing side of things, that's medicine to me. And the frustration doesn't blossom and turn into bitterness or anger. I begin to take it out on somebody else. If I let my frustration fester, it's like an infection. And next thing you know, I'm yelling at Robbie Joe. He's not seen my keys. I know I did it to myself. I know this is self-induced frustration. And a lot of frustration is. But whether it's self-induced frustration because you did the same dumb thing you always do, or something new that's come to your plate through someone else, either way, frustration can be a blessing because nothing's out of order. So ask yourself, why am I feeling frustrated? And what can I get from this? And what door can open in the middle of this frustration? What can I do? If pain comes to my life, you can bet I'm going to stretch and use Panaway and Kulazul and bath and medicines, and I'm going to decree and declare some things. And I see each one of those steps that I take, sitting on a cushion and, you know, changing positions and rubbing on some Panaway, and all those are steps towards total victory. In the midst of my frustration and my pain, I'm working myself towards something, and I may not feel any better with each step. I was watching the History Channel, and there was a guy on there that was cutting a rock, had a chisel and a hammer. He chiseled for a minute, he moved the chisel. He chiseled for a minute, moved the chisel. Chiseled for a minute, move a chisel. No visible sign of anything happening. He chiseled for a minute, moved the chisel. Chiseled for a minute, he kept moving his way across this big rock. Chisel, 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 chisel. Frustration. You talk about frustration. You look for the keys. You looked where you last had them. You look where you knew you put them. You told yourself, I'm putting them here because they're still not there. The kids haven't been around. You can't blame the kids this time. You hid the keys from yourself. I did this yesterday right up here. And I stopped in the middle of my frustration of hunting keys and reminded myself, well, one chisel at a time, I'm eliminating places that they're not. Yeah. They're not in my pockets, chisel, chisel, chisel. They're not in my book bag, chisel, chisel, chisel. No difference, I'm still, they're still lost. They're not, you know, on the table, chisel, chisel, chisel. They're not on the counter, chisel, chisel, chisel. Somebody came and said, they're not on the piano, chisel, chisel, chisel. And then suddenly, 100 chisels, no difference. Suddenly I looked on the corner of the mantle and there was my keys, right where Sarah hid them. Or maybe I put them there since I was about to play the piano. I could have done it.
And you're tall.
But guess what? And I'm tall. But the 101st chisel that guy hit, the giant rock just burst open and he got his reward. Keep chiseling. In the middle of frustration, do what little bit you know to do and just count it as a chisel. You want to saw a chain in half? Get the saw. Guess what? Zzz, chain's still there. Zzz, still there. Zzz, still there. Zzz, still there. Bear down. Zzz, still there. Zzz. But one of those zzz is going to cut through that thing. So you can get through your frustrations. I'm learning one step at a time, knowing that each step you take is a step in the right direction to resolve this thing and learn the lesson and fix what it is that's frustrating you so much. It came to teach you. It came to help you. Say thank you to your frustrations. Frustration comes with a feature that allows us to flip a switch that opens a door to a higher place of understanding where we're able to see our desire to control and a path to submission at the same time. The road less traveled leads away from the chaos and into the valley of peace where the stream runs with contentment. I'm traveling along at 75 miles an hour around the curve and traffic is stopped and there is road work ahead and I'm running late and bam, frustration sets in. Y'all ever do that? You're already late and it's like, Frustration likes to manifest through my nerves, through my forehead. I get a headache when I'm frustrated. Through my mouth, I start blaming people. I start cussing. You ought to hear me cuss. I cuss nearly as bad as Sarah. Next thing I'm thinking, but if I can just stop and one step at a time, do all that I can do. Okay, all I can do, I can't change the road work. I can't change the time, which is non-existent anyway. I can't change all these things. I can make a different decision about how I'm going to react to this and one step at a time do the right thing. We're frustrated. A lot of religious people are frustrated because we can't live up to the expectations of God. Yeah. Well, guess what? Just remove all those expectations because God's removed from the equation as we know him, her, it. So that's removed. Expectations are gone. You shouldn't be frustrated about not living up to God's expectations because there aren't any. Never was. They were imagined by some religious people and fed to you as a child. You believed it, so you're fine. Forget all that. Israel ended up in slavery. We know the story. They traded one god for the next. They had God, and then they had Pharaoh, and then they had Moses, and they were all the same. God, Pharaoh, and Moses, all the same difference. It's a god, and you're in slavery to whichever one of them you pick. And they got out and were wandering around the desert, but they never could enter into the promised land. That whole bunch had to die out. Do you know why? Because you can't enter into the promises with a slave mentality. You can't. All the slaves had to die in the wilderness before the children could enter into the promised land. And if you're a slave of religion, if you're a slave of God, and you think he owns you, and he tells you what to do and beats you when you don't do it, and rewards you when you do it, and if you're living life as a slave, you can forget entering into the promise of life. We have a promise to have an abundant life. To enjoy ourselves, to have great peace and joy. But you can't do that with a slave mentality. That's why you have to dump your God. That's why you have to dump your religion. That's why you have to dump your Pharaoh. That's why you have to leave Moses in the dust and be the master of your own destiny and understand that you can hear the voice all by yourself and you don't need any external deity, prophet, apostle, patriarch, book, guru, or mother-in-law. Telling you how to live your life. None of those things do you need. And I'm ending right now in 3 minutes. Oh! With empathy. Then I'll be done with this. This is something I'm learning. I used to think empathy was just a souped up version of sympathy. Sympathy's different. Sympathy is having pity or sorrow for someone. I have sympathy for that poor girl. She's just ignorant and she's... poor. I feel sorry for her. That's sympathy. Empathy is to feel the pain of someone as if you were them in their situation, in their shoes. I used to make fun of homeless crack kids until I became one. And suddenly I had empathy for people that had chosen that path. Because I realized, oh, after the first hit, it's no longer a choice. It makes you do it. Suddenly you're on strings and somebody's making, suddenly you're out of your own control. I used to make fun of people until I became one of them. And one day I picked up a chicken leg out of a garbage can at Piedmont Park that somebody had bit off of and turned around to the other side where they hadn't bit, and that was my lunch. And I bit into it, and I thought, I bet I'll never make fun of anybody eating out of a garbage can again. Empathy. Walking a mile in somebody's shoes, living in somebody's skin. We have to know what that's about, and we need to begin to empathize with our brothers and sisters, humanity, because they're all us. Do you have empathy for Black Lives Matter folks? Because you need to. You better. Do you have empathy for terrorists? You better. They're your brother. Do you have empathy for church ladies? Pentecostal preachers? I'd much rather spend 2 hours with a terrorist than a Pentecostal preacher. With a bomb strapped to his chest and him holding the button. Much rather. Much rather. Do you have empathy for drug addicts, or are you just pissed off because they moved into your neighborhood and cooking meth in the trailer behind you? You got to get some, that's a word of knowledge, I heard that. You need to get some empathy going because we're one. And it's when we understand the oneness of all this, that's when we can really get people to the point of saying, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing, because you are them. It's not about being them, you're already them. And of course you don't, of course you'd never take drugs. You're not that dumb, but of course you're taking them because that's you. That's a different slice of the same tangerine, and you've got to figure that out and walk in that empathy. I'm going to close with a poem here that I wrote about a drunk party. Last night I dreamed I went to a party. It felt like I'd been there before. The chaos and darkness and bedlam were obvious as soon as I walked in the door. Lines of cocaine were on mirrors, on tables. Smoke from their drug pipes filled up the air. Alcohol flowing. I had a strange knowing that something was missing in every heart there. Some were engaged, fighting and arguing. Some were complacent, no hope to spare. Some were confused. Others were angry. Others intent, their ill will to share. None of them realized their true condition. All of them thought they were right. Steeped in deception and inebriation, swallowing darkness, believing it's light. I once was there, not that long ago, standing here sober, it's easy to know, not to hold it against them, what they say and they do. If I were still drunk, I'd do the same too. What of religion and those who are addicts? Give them a breath test and see if they flunk. Never expect them to see things with clarity while they're still high and still drunk. If you'll have some empathy for those people that aren't seeing all that great revelation that you're seeing, and understand that you were once drunk too. Yeah. Before you sobered up, you didn't see everything you see. And guess what? You're drunk now. Compared to what it's going to be like in a few years, when you look back on this time, you're going to think, how could I ever believe all that stuff when I believe this now? We're going to continue down this path we're on. We're not there. Dr. Hammarskjöld, the legendary Secretary General of the UN in the 60s, President Kennedy called him the greatest statesman of our century. He said this, I don't know who or what put the question. I don't know when it was put. I don't even remember answering, but at some moment I did answer yes to someone or something. And from that hour, I was certain that existence is meaningful, and that therefore my life in self-surrender had a goal. I don't know when I said yes, I don't know who I said yes to, but somewhere the question was posed and my soul said yes. And that gave me purpose. I guess this is an altar call. And I need you to say yes today to your higher purpose. Some of my grown kids were at the house and Wesley Joe was there back probably a year ago. It was before we had Chloe full-time. And my grown kids, we were going to do something the next day. So I said, breakfast is 8:30, be at the table. I'm not playing with y'all. I'm going to get up and cook. I want hot breakfast on the table, 8:30. I want y'all smiling faces sitting here, me and my control spirit. Y'all get here and we're going to eat breakfast at 8:30 so we can leave the house by 9 and go and do what we were going to do. We're going to get on a boat and go do some stuff. So they all said, okay, Dad, okay, Dad. So they went and got in the bed and did their thing. Well, next morning I get up and I get Wesley Joe up and I'm cooking breakfast and getting it all ready, and 8:25 comes. I've not heard the sound yet of anybody stirring. So at 8:30, I put the hot breakfast on the table and I sat down with Wesley Joe and I began to fume. Disrespect. That's all that is disrespect. If they can't do one thing, all I ask them to do is one simple thing. Actually, I've asked them a million things. One thing, be at the table. I got up early. I cooked for them. They don't love me. They don't respect me. So I'm going through all my thing and I'm saying a few things out loud, but most of it, I'm just thinking it, and I'm thinking, I'm going to give it to the dog. I'm going to give their breakfast to the dog. And when they get up, I'm going to say, eat some damn Cheerios. I had your hot breakfast ready. Y'all don't respect me. Had all that going on. And Wesley Joe was the voice to me that day. And she looked at me and she said, Daddy, don't be mad. They're not awake yet.
Oh.
And that's what the voice had to say to me about all the people that I judge. My breakfast isn't all that special. I like to think it is. They're just not awake yet. Let them sleep. You don't have to wait. When they wake up, reheat it for them. Reheat it for them. That's what love does.
Sweet.
Let us not pray. Thank y'all very much.